Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 118 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger. Well, Frank Saravalli, and Frank, we are, 3 weeks left in the regular season?
Exactly.
I think Edmonton might have punched their ticket to the playoffs. They're 7 points up on Vegas now with 10 games remaining. You've got Austin Matthews on a tear. Connor McDavid's on a scoring tear. There's lots going on in the NHL. So let's start with Austin Matthews and McDavid. And, you know, Matthews obviously now chasing 60. He just set the Leaf record past Rick Vive in spectacular fashion with 2 goals. I think 60 is a no-brainer. Can he catch Ovi's 65, which is the highest goal total in the last 30 years?
25. I don't think so. I think I have him finishing at 62. There's 11 games left. I mean, he's at 56, so he'd need 9 and 11 games. I mean, with him, it's possible. He's scored at a 0.8 goals per game clip this season. And if you factor in the last 49 games with 49 and 49, it seems eminently doable. I just think at some point you're going to get a stretch, I would imagine, of a few games where he just doesn't score.
And funny enough, McDavid needs 8 games, 8 goals down the stretch in his last 10 games to get to 50. And, you know, we're going to have Bernie Nichols on the show today, Frank, on the pod. He scored 70 goals and 150 points in the same season. One of only 4 players ever to do that. So we're going to talk to him about, you know, the excitement, but the pressure of chasing, you know, historic milestones. 70 goals. Not a lot of guys did that. 150 points. Obviously not many players did that either. So it'll be interesting to see that. But you look at the Leafs, Frank, and they're putting themselves in like Tampa Bay. Are you at all concerned a little bit about how Tampa's played here the last few weeks?
No, I asked this question to Mike McKenna on the Daily Faceoff show this week, and my question to him was on a 1 to 10 scale, what's your level of concern for the Lightning? And I'm at like a 3. Like this team just, they can find a way to flip the switch. I honestly believe they don't care who they play, who they have to go through, whether they're starting on the road or at home, like none of it really matters to them. They've still got, in my estimation, the best goalie on the planet, and Igor Shesterkin may be knocking on that door, but Vasilevsky's got the track record. They've got arguably the best defenseman in the world in Victor Hedman, or certainly one of the top 5, and a really special and talented crop of forwards that know how to win. Like, I'm not betting against Tampa. I'm just, if that's the play, I'm sitting it out.
Okay. The New York, speaking of Shesterkin, don't look now, but like, we didn't think there was going to be much of a race, but suddenly the Rangers are within 2 points of the Carolina Hurricanes, Frank. Now, I know the Hurricanes have 1 game in hand, but, you know, suddenly first place in the Metro isn't the lock that we thought it was.
No, it's not. And not only that, but I know Shesterkin rebounded on Thursday night with a 30 save shutout of the Pens. But his numbers in the last 10 games, really going back to early March, the last month, have not been good. 10 games, 5-4-1, 900 save percentage. So my question to you is, if we were looking at the Vezina, had he done enough already? Still leading the league in save percentage at 935, but he was really up around 942. Has he sealed up the Vezina, or is it up for debate with someone like Markstrom or Saros or Freddie Anderson?
I think he's still the front runner, but you know, they still have 11 games, or the Rangers have 10. So he's probably playing another 7 games. I think the Vezina, there's more of a clear favorite, and it's kind of maybe his to lose down the stretch. Whereas the Hart Trophy, I still believe is wide open. I think the Hart Trophy is wide open. You know, we're talking about, you know, Austin Matthews just set the Leafs record for goals. Well, Roman Josi just set the Predators record for points as a defenseman. He got 3 more points last night. He's up to 87 points now. And he is 3 points shy of becoming only the 9th defenseman all time to score 90 points, Frank. And you look, he has 34 points in his last 17 games. Like, are you kidding me? Those are Gretzky-like numbers of the 80s, man. You're averaging 2 points a game for a defenseman.
He led the entire league in scoring, if I'm not mistaken, in the month of March.
Yeah.
Like all positions.
Ridiculous. So you look and he, like, when I was looking at guys, like when Bobby Orr was scoring all his points, he had Phil Esposito, right? Coffey was scoring. He had Wayne Gretzky, right? You know, other guys, Nashville has, no offense, Matt Duchene, but they have Matt Duchene. Like, Roman Josi is elite offensive numbers without an elite offensive player.
Still on track for 102 points.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know in another award, we thought Cale Makar had run away with the Nars. It wasn't even a debate. I'm sorry, if Roman Josi's getting to 100 points.
Oh, he's winning.
That's, yeah.
Well, I think if he gets to 95, he wins. Like, someone asked me that. Does he, like, I understand the mental twist of 100 compared to 98 and 99. I totally get it. But man, he scores 98 points today. Like, to me, he's winning the Norris. And honestly, he's right in there, Frank, for the Hart Trophy. Like, what a season. You think you've got Connor McDavid's going to set career high in points. I know it's not points per game, but career high in points. Matthews has his career high in goals and career high in points. Jonathan Huberdeau is career high. Roman, like, there's so many guys. Johnny Gaudreau going to reach 100 points for the first time. Like, funny enough, Frank, Leon Draisaitl has 50 goals and 100 points. He's only the 24th player all time to do that twice. And he might not finish top 5 in voting. And he's had that good of a year.
He's going to be in top 5 on my ballot.
Yeah.
Well, he just is. Like, he's been that good all season
long. Oh, I agree. But somebody, so there's Huberdeau, there's Gaudreau, there's Matthews, there's McDavid, there's Josi, there's Draisaitl. We only get 5 votes.
You right? Left off Kaprizov.
Yeah, Kaprizov, sure, yeah.
It's down to 7 guys, and those are the 7 for 5 spots.
Yeah.
For me.
Like, it's unreal. Like, this is, I've started like crunching all the numbers, and I'm going to wait till the end of the year because you never know in 10 games. But I honestly, Frank, this is the toughest Hart Trophy vote I could think, the most close that I've ever been a part of.
I totally agree. I think it's, and I'm allowing for almost any possibility over these last 10, 11 yeah. games. This might be the latest I submit my ballot.
Oh, for sure.
Because you want all the information, all the data you can find. And not to say that, you know, provides for recency bias because of what happens late. I just think the awards voting is always shaded a bit towards the final 20 or 25 games of the season, not because it's what's happening nearest. It's also just because everyone knows the games are the hardest to win compared to earlier in the season.
And if conversely, if one guy has like a slow down the stretch, that might be the difference where it's like, because people are so close right now. There's not, you know, I've seen people writing, oh, so-and-so is the favorite for the Hart. And no offense, I don't buy that. I don't see any clear favorite today for the Hart.
Yeah, I've done some Toronto radio the last week or two, and everyone's, well, Matthews is the favorite, the front runner for the Hart. Like, he may be, but he's not there yet. Like, no one is. That's the point. That's at least the point in my ballot, is like, I have not put any player into any locked in spot. No. Like I said, I've narrowed down the list, 7 guys for 5 spots, and I have zero idea what order they're going to be in.
I'm totally with you. I think it's going to be fascinating down the stretch. Another award for how much did Jay Woodcroft in Edmonton, the change that that team has had, his, you know, they've got the most points. They've got the fourth best points percentage since he was hired. You know, Mike Smith is playing better. You look at that team. What do you make of the turnaround and the input that Jay Woodcroft has made in Edmonton? Because you just, I think Jack Michaels had it. Like, there's only like seven coaches all time who have had more wins to start their pro career at the NHL level.
It's been really impressive. And I think the confidence that he's also projected has been big. I would love to understand, and you're closer to it and would know way better than me, how beneficial the other part of the coaching change was in this team's turnaround, in the assistant coaches getting swapped out as well.
Well, Dave Manson, you go back to his time in Prince Albert, where he was a defensive coach there for eight seasons, two different stints of 4 years. And Dave Manson, he took how he coached young defensemen, same into Bakersfield in the American League and same in Edmonton. Like Evan Bouchard is a prime example. Tyson Barry, those two players, specifically Barry, under Dave Manson, has been infinitely better. And Evan Bouchard, who had his first ever 3-point game the other night, but Evan Bouchard is starting to use his 6'3" body to shield guys better. You know, he's slowly coming around and being a better defensive. Now he's also paired with Duncan Keith and he doesn't have to play the top minutes with Nurse. So I think that helps him. Like, you're shielding him, you're putting him in a better position to succeed. But Dave Manson, from the defensemen I've talked to that got to play under him, go back to Prince Albert or in the American League, they love him. And Dave was hard. Like, Dave was mean as a player, but he was very skilled. So he has a real certain specific way he likes to defenseman to play. And that's what he encourages. And he's big on the Oilers aren't a very physical defense core, Frank. So he really encouraged his defensemen. They don't want to back in and get engaged in battles all over the ice because they're not that big. Right. And guys like Bouchard 6'3", but he's not that physical. So they've really changed how they defend and how they want their defensemen to attack up. And so they really force their forwards to help a lot on back pressure. But Dave Manson, if you watch how Edmonton defends in areas, watch how their defensemen try to attack guys before they can take advantage of their physical size.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, with all that said, and as good of a job as Woodcroft has done, I'm sorry, but the Jack Adams winner is in the Pacific Division, and it's Darryl Sutter.
Yeah. I wasn't saying Woodcroft yet. He's not going to win.
That's made a bigger singular impact year over year than Darryl Sutter. That team in Calgary playing the way they are now versus what they were when he took over late last year is a totally different team.
Who do you think would be the other two finalists?
I think, unfortunately, the one part about the Jack Adams, and as writers, we don't vote on this, but the unfortunate part about the Jack Adams is that there's a lot of coaches that have done a great job that get overlooked because people say they have great players. Like Jared Bednar will be overlooked because people will say, oh, Colorado, look at that roster. They're stacked. But people will forget the first few weeks of the season when they were calling for his head and they fixed it. They turned it around. Andrew Brunette has been great in Florida. He took over in what may be one of the most difficult situations you can. Your head coach resigns of an undefeated team, 7-0. Joel Quenneville steps aside and they never missed a beat.
Yeah.
Rod Brind'Amour, another one, Carolina. You know,
Todd McClellan in LA, you look at all the injuries on that blue line.
Gerard Gallant with the Rangers. Like, the Rangers were no good. They've gotten the Gallant effect.
No.
I think there's a stacked list of candidates, but I can't think of one coach that's made a bigger singular impact on his team's identity than Darryl Sutter.
And he won't be in the category at all, Frank, but I want to say, I think that the job that Don Granato has done to make Buffalo a much more competitive team, like, look at the teams Buffalo has beat in the last 3 weeks.
Right? Well, look at how far back they are in the standings and how they're hanging tough, even against teams that are really good.
Yeah.
Well, Florida the other day, they were down 4-3 or 4-1 and they lost 5-3. Like, They made it a game. That team has Carolina. No quit.
Yeah. Yeah, they just beat the Canes, right? 4-2 like that. They're and they get Owen Power next year, who I think
this year they're getting him.
Yeah.
They're going to get him starting next week.
Yeah. Well, hey, speaking of that, Frank, what about the upset in the NCAA, the Frozen Four, and Michigan with all their top picks, Denver gets it done in overtime. What a game.
Yeah. Chris Peters is in Boston at the Frozen Four for Daily Faceoff. His story's up on dailyfaceoff.com. Go over and read it. He said this has the chance to be the best Frozen Four ever, and he may not be wrong.
All right. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk on a Friday. Ty, how you doing? Oh, he's got the Jays hat on. MLB, baby.
Oh, opening day for the Toronto Blue Jays Masters weekend. I mean, I am
into my veins.
Yeah, I'm going to be stapled to the couch this weekend, and I'm very fired up about that. That means I'll be ordering some DoorDash. And well, I've used the app before, so I can't use the code RUNDOWNDD. But if you've never used DoorDash, use the promo code RUNDOWNDD. Gets you 25% off and no delivery fees off your first order.
Ding dong.
DoorDash. Hello, it's a Friday. We're feeling good. Let's start with this for fill in the blank. San Jose Sharks, Doug Wilson announcing he's no longer going to be with the team. So the question is this. It will take blank years for the San Jose Sharks to get back into the playoffs. Jason?
Oh, man.
You got to give us the 8 to 10. Come on, you've been saying it forever.
But dude, they're already in. This is year 4 yeah. of 8. So I could argue that they're I would say 4 years. But obviously, I have a family member that I don't want to have to miss the playoffs for the first 6 years of his NHL career. So I'm going to give them an extra one less year. And I'll say 3.
Okay. I don't think the rebuild starts until they start getting rid of those contracts.
Yeah, that's fair.
And too. You though?
Well, Vlasic's the interesting one. Brent Burns is still playing very well. Playing quite well.
Yeah, I think Vlasic he's on my buyout targets list for this summer.
Huh? I think
cap hit next season of 3.7.
Yeah.
He's making 7. I don't know. I think you have to do it.
It was interesting. I spoke to Brett Hedekin about Vlasic. He thinks if Vlasic can improve his conditioning, he could, and I think, Frank, because San Jose, now they might believe they can legit compete next year because as a third pair, they don't have a lot of guys up for big contract extensions, right? They signed Hurdle. Mm-hmm. They might be able to just keep Vlasic for 1 year, say he is what he is. We know he's not a $7 million player, but he can help us in our third pair. And then it saves you the extra years of the buyout when you think that maybe you're done. So I wonder if they just hold off for another year on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm taking a look at the buyout numbers again. It doesn't really save them a whole ton on the buyout. Yeah. Obviously 2 extra years, but it's not crazy. So I think if you're going to do it, you just rip the Band-Aid off. And how many 35-year-olds find a way to improve their conditioning?
I mean, so what's your answer, Frank?
My question? Answer is like 6.
6. All right. Long rebuild coming for whoever is the new Sharks GM. The next question I got for you, looking at some of the non-playoff teams, but out in the Eastern Conference, the non-playoff team in the East that has the best chance of getting back to the playoffs next season is blank. Frank?
New York Islanders. If you watch the way they've played over the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, all that we were missing was the wheels falling off of the Washington Capitals. If they did not go on a 7-0 run, I am not convinced that the Caps would have missed. They might have missed the playoffs and the Islanders might have snuck in.
Well, the Caps are the years of being a great team are catching up with them. And yeah. I would agree with the New York Islanders, although the NHL has become pretty offensive and it's, if you can't score, it's hard. So, you know, they got a bunch, I don't know where they're moving contracts out. I don't really understand what they're going to do there. So I'm actually going to go with someone different and I'm going to go with the surprise team and I'm going with the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah. You like okay. The drought to end.
So I love the pick. I love the boldness of the pick, but tell me which of those teams in the Atlantic they're jumping over to get in next year.
Well, maybe they're going to go crossover and be the 5th and Washington's out.
They're 30 points back of that. You're talking like a 33-point improvement next season. Something like that, 30 points.
Get a goalie, Owen Power shows up. getting
D-man to play with him. This is the biggest gap we've seen, right? Yeah. In the Eastern playoffs from 8 to 9. So,
but that's not the point. The point is where the Sabres are now. It doesn't matter what position they're in. It's to get to 93 points next year, or 94 or 95, whatever it's going to take to get in. They're not going to be there.
The season's not over. They're going to end up with 75 points. Teams have improved by 18 points.
They're only 23 back of Washington right now. Eh?
Only 23? What? My God. I would love to see it because I think the NHL, when that Sabres fan base is engaged, is so much better. It's really a shame to see what's happened in Buffalo. That was one of my favorite places to go cover a game because everyone was into it.
They've quietly set the NHL record 11 consecutive seasons without the playoffs. So so I hope that they get out, but I'm going Sabres, baby. I'm going right. Sabres. Easy to go. Write Islanders. They've been in the conference final twice.
News this week that Ryan Getzlaf is retiring at the end of the season. Matt Larkin did a bit of a deep dive over at Daily Faceoff about his Hall of Fame case. Your question, Ryan Getzlaf is a blank ballot Hall of Famer. First, second, third. What you got here, Jay?
Oh, man, it's a good question.
You'd have to know who else is on the ballot.
Yeah, that's
valid. Is that really what it'd come down to with Getzlaf is how good the competition is?
Not for me, but if you were going to say second or third, your reasoning would have to be that there's just four really good guys ahead of him in that one year. I personally think he's a first guy, but I'm also jumping the order.
Yeah, so you're taking him. I look at his numbers. He's not a point of game player. He scored 30 goals once, never scored 100. I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he's a really good player, but I look at other guys who waited a long time who had better numbers than him. I think the fact that he's an Anaheim Duck and some people are going to go, we got to get a Duck player in. That's going to help him. But I will say he's like a third. Not that it matters at the end of the day when you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. But to me, he's not like a stone cold lock. So I don't have him as a first.
He's won so much. And I did the same thing with Corey Perry in my head. And Corey Perry, you could argue, had more individual success because he had the individual awards, right?
Yeah.
He had the heart.
But every guy ever that's gotten a heart has gotten in.
I'll bring up this to you guys. Rarely did we hear about, this guy won the Canada Cup. Well, the Canada Cup is no different than the Olympics at the end of the day, right? The Olympics gets talked about a lot now by a lot of people. It was never brought up before to get on the best team. And trust me, Canada is still the best team. To be on that team shows you're a good player. But there was guys who were on the Canada Cup teams that were very good players on their individual teams that weren't surefire Hall of Famer guys. So sometimes I think we overlook or overblow the Olympic. Oh, you're on Canada's Olympic team. Well, there's guys that are on the team that, it's still we're talking like 14 games of a career, right? 14 games of a career. The guy played 11:50. Like, but it's getting such a there small
percentage. Yeah, that's the thing. Players to get in there, your conference, yeah, right?
To get there and to do it over a span of 4 years, like to do it twice, is that means you're one of the very best and maintain that standard for a stretch of time. And I think that's the other mark on Getzlaf's career. It wasn't just the points. It's also the style of game. Like, he was really one of the premier power forwards in the game for a long time. And so it wasn't necessarily the point total, and he had some fantastic years. I also look at his playoff track record as well and how many deep runs the Anaheim Ducks went on. Obviously he had that Stanley Cup early in his career as a 21-year-old, but to finish with 120 points and 125 playoff games.
Yeah, he was good in the playoffs. You're right.
Really good in the playoffs. Track and on record. A team that went to the conference final or better a lot.
Yeah. I'll look at his playoff numbers more than the Olympics. That's all. I just think sometimes overrate being on Canada's Olympic team because usually they win.
Fair enough. All right, let's wrap this up with a PointsBet bonus question here. PointsBet Ontario, or PointsBet is live in Ontario. Download their app, check it out. They got a nice little welcome bonus for you as well. The Blue Jays start the season. I'm fired up about that. I'm sweating out. I need Justin Thomas to make the cut at the Masters. Corey Connors, I got some money on him, the good Canadian boy. I'm loving it. If you're out in Ontario, play along with PointsBet Canada. Frank, you liked when we did this game on the Daily Faceoff show, so I'm bringing it to the rundown. Two truths and a lie. I have three stats in front of me. Two of them are true. One of them is false. So here they are. Number one, Connor McDavid leads the NHL in 3-on-3 goals with 4. Number two, Cale Makar leads the NHL in 3-on-3 points by a defenseman. And the last one, Jonathan Huberdeau leads the NHL in 3-on-3 points overall with 6. One of those is a lie. One of them is not a true stat. One of you, who wants to go first? I'll just open the floor.
I will go, and I'm going to say Connor McDavid leads with 3-on-3 goals with 4.
Jay, which one do you think is the lie? You think it's the McDavid one?
Yeah.
It is not. It is actually the Cale Makar stat. Cale Makar does not lead the NHL in 3-on-3 points by a D-man. That number, or that honor, I suppose, belongs to three guys. Chris Letang, Zach Werenski, and Gustav Forsling have the most three-on-three points by a D-man.
That should have been the question. Gustav, yeah. I love it.
Connor McDavid
could have given me 15 minutes without looking online to say who is tied with those two. Who's the third guy? I don't think I would have guessed Gustav Forsling. So good for Gustav.
Jonathan Huberdeau leads the way with 6 points in 3-on-3. McDavid, Larkin, and Ben all have 5 points, and McDavid has 4 goals. Only 3 others have 3. It's Laine, Hertl, and Larkin. So there you go. There's your 3-on-3 stat rundown to wrap up another edition of Fill in the Blank delivered by DoorDash.
I love it. Speaking of scoring, today, Frank, on the rundown, we are going to be joined by Bernie Nichols, who is in a few very exclusive categories.
Love it. Let's do it.
Today on the rundown, excited to be joined by a player who is in a very unique categories. He was the 73rd overall pick in 1980. Turned out to be a pretty good pick. Ended up playing over 1,100 games. Also is one of only 8 players to have scored 70 goals in a season. One of only 4 players to ever score 70 goals and 150 points in the same season. Bernie Nichols joins us on the rundown. Bernie, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How you guys doing?
Hey, we're pretty good, man. We're excited to have you on. 70 goals, 150 points. Holy cow, that is a good year. So I thought you'd be one of the great guys to have on talking about chasing milestones. And, you know, we were telling us just before how you were very close to 50 and 50 as well. So let's start there. How much pressure were you feeling internally or maybe even externally as you were chasing that 50 and 50 marker?
Yeah, you know, I never really felt pressure as far as having to get it. I was more excited about trying to get it, if that makes sense. So it would have been great. I end up doing it in 51 games. And then obviously you're playing with Gretz too, right? Like he's done it all. So for me to try to do something that he's done or something like that was more exciting than anything.
So yeah, you get 50 and 51, which is remarkable. And then the season just keeps going, Bernie. And like, you know, you had 100 point seasons before, but like to go from 100 to 150, like that's a massive jump, right? And so what went right in 1988-89 for you where, you know, you had one of the greatest single season careers in single seasons in NHL history?
Like the obvious answer to that is everything. You know, and just the excitement of playing. We've been talking here. My fiance is a huge Leafs fan, and we're watching Austin all the time, right? And I just said to her the other night, like, do you know how much fun that kid's having? Because it's just so much fun to play, and you can see it out there, right? When they're playing, and for me, that whole year, probably the greatest thing about that year was just playing with Wayne. Everything else was a bonus, even though scoring 70 goals or 150 points, but just the excitement and the fun that you couldn't wait to get to the rink every day. The excitement, the joy of playing, it was just so much fun. And that's what's happening. And it's like you're scoring at will, which isn't really the case, but it's like, it felt like that, right? Like it was just so much fun. So that was probably the best part of the whole deal.
I'm glad you picked up on the fun that Austin Matthews seems to be having, because, you know, it does feel or look like his goal scoring comes so easy to him. But I was going to ask, during a season like that, when you're going through it, are you also feeling any pressure at all? Like some guys, when they get close to milestones or things begin to pile up, do you think about it a little bit more? How does it work?
Well, not really. Other than maybe to get 70, right? Like to get 50 is so much better than 49, or 60, so much better than 50. So that kind of, there was some excitement that night for sure. So I scored my 70th goal in an empty net, and I had the puck probably at the top of the circle, the faceoff circle, empty net, with just a guy laying down with a stick. And I couldn't feel my hand. I just kind of fanned on it. Like I was so nervous to shoot. I got the whole empty net and I missed it. And I thought, oh shit. Or, you know, so when it came around the next time, I got it, just got over our blue line, and I slapped the puck as hard as I could, or it felt like that, in the middle of the net, you know? So obviously, and I'm sure he was feeling some heat too. You could see last night when he scored, the excitement. It was so much better than the 54th goal, the 50th goal, the one to break the Leafs all-time record. You could just see the excitement that went out of that kid, and the pressure that just kind of left him there. It was pretty special for him.
Well, I'm glad you told the story about the empty net, because for whatever reason, people made a lot of Matthews scoring 50 for the first time into an empty net. And I'm like, they all count the same. And by the way, to score an empty net goal, your coach has to trust you to be out there late. So there's something to that, but at least you're honest in telling us the story and how you hit 70, that it was on an empty net.
That's right. Yeah. They're obviously, they're easier to get, but they're every bit as important as the other one. Like you said, your coach has the faith in you to go out and do the job defensively. And if something comes in the other end, then that's obviously a bonus. So, and that's no different with him. And that might have been different just because it was in Toronto. They want him to get it in Toronto. So to put him out there, for him to get it there, was so much better for the fans and for him to get it there than on the road.
Now, Bernie, the milestone for you mentioned the empty netter, but you didn't mention humbly that you had a hat trick in the final game of the season and 5 points to get to 70 and 150. Now, you mentioned that you played with Wayne Gretzky. Gretz scored 5 goals when he broke the 39 and 50. So, I know Wayne Gretzky. I'm guessing he was as excited for you to say, okay, we're going to get you to these milestones. But take me through that last game. You're taking on Vancouver. I looked at, you had 12 shots. Like, did Wayne say to you, you're getting 70 tonight? Like, was there a conversation before the game?
Well, he never mentioned that, but I know Wayne was hoping for it for sure. That was our 70th ninth game. We weren't going to play the 80th game. It was in Vancouver. We played at home that night in LA. The next night was, or 2 nights later, was going to be our last game in Vancouver. So it was exciting for me. I thought about it all day, and shooting was never an issue. The thing about that whole year was the coach, Robbie Fitorik, told me he wanted me to shoot more. And for me, I felt I was more of a passer, right? Like, I'm playing with Luke Robitaille. I'm trying to get him the puck. But he told me to shoot, so I shot. I set a record that year for most shots by a Kings player. I think I had well over 400 shots on goal that year. So I had no problem shooting, especially that night when I know I needed 3 goals for 70. I was going to shoot, and I got one. I think I don't know when my first one was, but I remember getting the one in the second period to get to 2. So I knew there was a good chance. I knew every time, which was funny, and I think a lot of goal scorers feel this way. I felt when I had 2 goals, I always felt there was a good chance I was going to get the third one. Not that I had the time, but as a goal scorer, you feel that. And at definite time, and I had lots of chances, as you say, I had 12 shots, but to finally get it was really cool. And Gretz was out there. I never played with Wayne that year. We were both centermen, but I played a lot power play. We killed penalties together. And you know, we were out there a lot together. I know he was out for the empty netter with me. So that was really cool.
And I like that you brought that up, Bernie, because I think one of the biggest misconceptions is when they see 70 goals, 80 assists, 150 points, people thought you played with Wayne, but I'm like, well, Bernie was a center. Like, I know you played on the power play. I was looking through the goal chart, but you and Wayne obviously played a little bit of shifts, you know, every now and then it seemed at 5-on-5, but not a lot. So like, what do you credit that to for you to explode that much when it wasn't because of Wayne Gretzky? And I think it's important for people to know that because, you know, and not to downplay Wayne, of course, but
right.
you weren't riding on the coattails of Wayne Gretzky on the way to 150.
Well, I killed penalties with Wayne and I had 8 shorthanded goals. That was pretty cool. And obviously the power play. You know, I do give Gretz most of the credit. Like one thing, you know, that I was really cool about Wayne is I always like to, hopefully our line would come after Wayne's, because first time I ever heard this as a forward, Gretz would take the first guy off the ice. So if it was a left winger, he'd take him. If it was a right winger, take him. Right. So I always stayed late anyways. And Luke would stay on, but Dave Taylor would always come off quick.
Okay.
And so hopefully if I know Gretz's line's behind us and Wayne's going to come on. So you're going to get a pretty good shift with Wayne anyways. Right. So I did play with Wayne a lot. And you know, I've said this different times with any great player. You always want to, it feels like you always do your best or, you know, for that guy. And it was no different with me, right? Like you obviously want to play well for yourself. You want to play well for the team, but for some reason, well, not for some reason, the obvious reason, everybody wanted to do well for Wayne. And I did, and I enjoyed it. I hung with Wayne every day, that year. Like every day. And I tell people this day, like, I hate McDonald's right now because every day for lunch, Wayne would say, let's go for lunch. I say, yep. And he loved McDonald's. So I laugh about that now because every time I see McDonald's, I always think of Wayne and I'm not stopping. I'm going right by.
That's a true story. He would eat at McDonald's.
Gretz loved McDonald's. And in Culver City, where our practice rink was, like 200 yards up from the practice rink was McDonald's. And, you know, when Gretz says, let's go for lunch or let's go wherever you're going. And we went to McDonald's a lot.
That's the perfect segue to my next question, because the game has changed so much. Like young guys now, a lot of them don't even drink, not one beer, not one drink. They're so concerned about what they're putting into their bodies. Definitely not McDonald's, maybe once a year. But Wayne always says his appreciation for how tough it is to score now. Obviously you're someone that still watches the game closely. What is your appreciation like for these guys and what they're accomplishing, you know, given how much the game has changed, how the goalies, their equipment, they're much bigger, everything that goes with it.
Yeah. I'm kind of a little on the fence with that. Just because like 100% goalies are bigger, better. But to be honest, like to me, it's shinny hockey out there. It really is. Guys don't pay a price. Like I got my thumb broken, my one finger broken, my other finger shattered from slashes. You know, you can't touch a guy today. You can't put your stick on another guy's stick. It's a penalty. Like I watched them play. And like I say, I watch the Leafs all the time. No one touches Marner or Matthews. No one, like, we used to get the shit beat out of us going in front of the net. Like I still got welts on my arm from cross-checking guys, breaking their sticks over your arm or slashing in the hands. Like I know it's not, the penalties, right? Guys have more 5-on-3s. Guys will have a 5-on-3 more in 1 year than I had my whole career. Like Gretz and Mario, would you ever like to see them play in today's game with 5-on-3s? Like, They would, it'd be ridiculous. So as much as goalies are better, I don't necessarily say it's tougher to score because they don't pay a price. You can go stand in front of the net today's game and no one touches you. I remember back in the day, guys wearing flap jackets and stuff because guys cross check you and beat the hell out of you in front of the net, like Pronger and Darian Hatcher. Like it was a nightmare. I wouldn't go there. Let me put it that way. I wouldn't go in front of the net because they just wail on you.
That's a really fair point. But so as a student of the game or as someone that's a fan of the game, what version do you like better to watch?
Oh, I love today's game. You know, because you can't clutch and grab. You can't, like, we go, as soon as you step over the blue line, those big defensemen just grab a holy and pin you. Like, I love it today. Being an offensive guy, like, guys are out there freewheeling, skating around. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch those boys in Toronto there. Like, I could watch Matthew. I could watch Connor McDavid all day long. How skilled they are and just watch, put that on display all day. Like the 5-on-3 to me, or the 3-on-3 in overtime. Like there's not, I would love to play that back in the day. Like that is so much fun to watch. Like, so today's game's amazing to watch. These kids are so talented. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Now, Bernie, I want to go, you know, you get drafted by the Kings, you know, you play through the Kings, you have that unbelievable season. Then the next year, you're traded after, I think it was 47 games. And, you know, you're off to another great year. Take me back. So that's the first time you're traded. Were you surprised? What happened surrounding that deal from you going from the Kings to the Rangers?
Yeah, I was actually just devastated. And, you know, I say this to a lot of people, like not so much being traded. It's the fact that like I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to play with Wayne for 5-10 years, right? Like, obviously, what I did in 1 year was amazing. So, like that's what hurt the most is not being able to play with Wayne, right? So, it started in the summertime. I just had my big year, and I went to the owner Bruce McDonald, and I said, "Look, I wanted to buy a house. It was a $1 million house in 90 or 89, 90. And he said, "Yeah, absolutely." He said, "I'll never trade you." Right. And I thought that I just signed a big deal. So I just wanted to, I was going to put down roots and be there and I'll never trade you. So we're at the All-Star game in Pittsburgh, and Mike Vernon after the skills competition on Friday night, Mike Vernon comes up and he said, "I heard you just got traded." And I said, "What the, are you talking about traded? I wasn't traded." And sure enough, I went and seen Bruce McNall and he said, "Yeah, just traded to the Rangers." And, you know, I think, like Gretz never had anybody to play with in LA. Like, I end up playing with Luke and Dave Taylor, the two best players there. And for some reason they didn't match with Gretz, I guess. So they needed someone, obviously you got greatest player, you know, ever to play the game, and he doesn't have anybody to play with. So they had to get someone to play with Wayne, and I guess I was the one they wanted. So that's what happened.
So Bernie, you actually ended up switching all-star teams that weekend from the West to the East. Is that right?
No, I still end up playing for the West. I didn't go to the East then. I waited till after. So, but I, you know, Brian Leetch was there, who was my new teammate, which was pretty cool. But I still played. For the West.
So, you know, that's obviously devastating. You go to the Rangers, you know, they were just kind of starting to build, and obviously they won the Stanley Cup, I think it was 4 years later. But did you ever really, you know, you had a full season, you're a point of game player the next year in 91 with the Rangers, and then you played one game the following year and got traded to the Edmonton Oilers. You know, so you're bouncing around all of a sudden, Bernie, after having roots in LA. Tell me, because you're in Edmonton for a year and a bit, then you get traded again to the New Jersey Devils. And, you know, you had a stretch with Edmonton, New Jersey, and Chicago where you went four consecutive years to the conference final. So you're on successful teams every time, but you were bouncing around. Did you get used to it, or was it frustrating always getting moved?
I think the first one's the one that hurts, right? There was two that I went on my own. So I go to New York, and if you get traded, you get to go to original six team. So I tell people, play Madison Square Gardens, play for the Rangers was really pretty cool. The next time, like you said, we just played in Boston, and same thing, right? So now I'm in Edmonton, or I'm in New York. I'm about to have twins. So I talked to Neil Smith, the GM there. Same thing. I'll never trade you, right? So now I buy another house in New York. And that's obviously not very cheap there either. But opening game, we play in Boston. Roger Neilson calls me up like 7:30 in the morning or something. And you're still asleep, so you're not even thinking anything. But now it's Mark Messier. So I guess if you got to get traded for somebody, you get traded for Mark, I guess you can accept that. But that was tough. But, you know, I tell people too, right? As a Canadian boy, you got to play in Canada somewhere, right? So as tough as it is to get traded again, to go to Edmonton was something special, just because being a Canadian boy and playing in Canada was really good. And, the cool thing about that is, who do we meet first round in the playoffs is the Kings.
Yeah.
And they got Gretzky, they got Curry. I don't know if Grant Fuhr's there. They Charlie Huddy, Marty, like they got half the Oilers there. And so we played them first round and we ended up beating them in six games. I had a really good playoffs and we did. We went to the semifinals that year. Chicago beat us. And then Pittsburgh beat them. But, you know, that was pretty neat to go play in Edmonton and have the success that we had. And then, you know what, after that, and I know Glenn did that because they were rebuilding and he gave me an opportunity to go to New Jersey. So that was pretty nice of Glenn. And we did. We had a great team there too. Marty Brodeur's first year, Scott Niedermeyer, Scotty Stevens. So I did play for some good teams.
Bernie, how did your game change and evolve as your career went on?
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, when I went to New York, we all know, like, who didn't love playing in that Smythe division, right? Like, our games were 8-7, 9-5, right? Like, it was just wide open. And then you get to New York and, you know, Roger Neilson there. It's a 3-2 league, 2-1. A lot different, a lot tighter checking, more physical probably. You know, Roger, it wasn't like in LA, like we'd be on 2-minute power play. We'd play the whole time. Right. And Roger kind of had it. He never put like three skilled guys together. He'd always put maybe a couple of men, like a checker or something like that. So, your role has changed from being more of a offensive player to more of a two way, splitting your time on the power play. So your offensive numbers would not be as big there. Same as in New Jersey with Jock Lemaire, right? Like it was at more of a defensive style of a game, which is fine. I enjoyed that. As a player, you want to be known as a two-way player. Just that offensive side's a little bit more fun to play.
So Bernie, tell us what you're up to now.
Well, I still do a lot of charity events. I still love playing hockey. I do fantasy camps. I was supposed to do Mario's fantasy camp a week ago, but I ended up getting COVID, so I couldn't go. I do a lot of hunting in the fall, play a lot of golf. I worked for the Kings in 2012 or 13 when they won the cup. So that was fun. But other than that, it's just do a lot more playing than anything.
Enjoy now, life.
Yeah. Sounds fun. Now, Bert, I want to go back to your rookie season with the Los Angeles Kings. You get your first recall in November. You played a game. Now, did you go back to the minors again or did you get injured?
No. Which was funny. My first year, and I should have made the team without a doubt, but I didn't. And so they sent me to New Haven. I get called up to LA, and I think Parker McDonald's our coach, and we're getting beat like 5-0. I didn't play a shift. I just sat in the bench, and even the crowd is, you know, yelling to play the kid. Like, they can't do any worse than what you got, right? Like, we get beat 5-0, and I never had a shift, and I don't know why. So I get called up again later in Calgary, played there a little bit, but then I end up firing the coach, and Don Perry came up from New Haven. This was in like March or something, and then he had called me up to play, and I think I played like 21 games, or I played under 25 because I was a rookie the next year. I have three hat tricks at three in a row at home. Scored 9 games in. It's got my first goal, but then after that, it went pretty good.
Well, yeah, I was looking at your stats. So it's funny because it says on the NHL, your first official game is November 19th at Calgary, because back in the 80s, if you were recalled and you didn't step on the ice, you didn't get considered a game played, even though you were dressed. So that's what happened to you. Because that's how Gary Unger, he told me the story. That's how he lost his Iron Man streak. He didn't even get a shift. Like, God, that's still one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. But so you technically were recalled before. Then you come up, you play 7 games in February and March. You don't score. But then you score 14 goals in your last 14 games of the year. You mentioned you had, in a span of 5 games, you had 3 hat tricks, for goodness sakes. You were always a goal scorer. Like, you look, you had 60 goals in junior, even in New Haven, you were lighting it up. But now, did Parker McDonald just not like you? What was
I have no idea. I think, you know, he just played his boys. And that's probably why he didn't last long as a coach, right? Like, he had his, you know, triple crown line there. I don't know who else was there. Cause after that, there was no reason for me not to play. But I don't know. I don't know if it was a money thing. I think I get sent down because of a money thing, because they drafted Doug Smith that year as a first rounder. So he had to play there, which he should not have been playing there ahead of me, but whether that was a money thing. So I don't know what happened. Like, I don't know how you can't play a kid when you call him up, why you wouldn't play him one shift anyways. Like, there's a reason why. I got 43 goals down there in like 55 games or something. So, and you need some goal scoring. So I'm not sure why you don't get called up, but I guess that, or you don't play, but I guess that's why the guy ended up losing his job.
Yeah. He never coached again in the National Hockey League. So
yeah.
Not dressing Bernie Nichols. That's what we're going to say. That's why Parker McDonald, not dressing Bernie Nichols, who was a 70 goal scorer. Hey, some coaches look back and be like, I might have made a mistake. I didn't read the room very well that time. Yeah. Maybe.
Jay, let's play a little rapid fire.
Yeah. No, I'm going to get to that. Bernie, in rapid fire, the only rule, you have to answer the question.
Okay.
Okay, so we like to start with a few easy ones. When Bernie Nichols sitting at home relaxing, maybe watching a Leaf game, what's your cocktail of choice?
I don't drink.
Okay, no, cocktail can be non-alcoholic.
Iced tea.
Okay. Yeah. Now, did you ever drink, Bernie?
I did not.
Oh.
I think I was the only NHL player at that time that didn't drink.
I was going to ask
anybody that didn't.
Yeah. Was it difficult in the 80s being in the NHL as the only non-drinker?
You know what? No, I felt a lot better in the morning than most of our guys, because we didn't charter back then, and those 6-7 o'clock flights. I felt good.
So you never played guilty?
Never. Yeah.
What impressed you most as a rookie? And in the NHL about Marcel Dion's game, and how much did you know about him before he got to LA?
I knew nothing about him, just how easy things came for him. He just, he was so gifted offensively. He was fast skater, great hands.
You always say, you know, you learn when you play with great players, and you obviously were a very gifted offensive player. What was the one thing you learned from watching or talking to Gretz that helped you as an offensive player?
I can say, you know, the coolest thing Gretz ever said to me, and this is kind of off a little bit. I never forget this. We're playing a game. He just come over to me, just tapped me on the knee pads, just me quietly, and just says, "I need you tonight." And to this day, that's still the coolest thing that he's ever said to me, you know, and you just go, "Oh shit, like you got it. I'm there." Right. Like it was awesome.
Were you, how long did it take you to not be in awe of playing with the great one?
I think everybody is in awe of Gretz the whole time, just because of the things he does. I would say to people, expect the unexpected with Wayne. I could be standing in front of the net and have four guys surrounding me and the puck's on your stick. And you go, how the hell did that happen? Right. And so I don't think like playing with him, it was just so much fun for me. And that's why I was never nervous playing with him, just because it was so much fun. And I knew I was going to get the puck, even though I wanted to pass it. I knew I was getting them from Gretz, and when I got it, I was shooting it.
Now, was your nickname Bernie Pumpernickels?
Yes, Bob Miller named me that. Started in Edmonton in the playoffs that first year. We scored our first game, 10-8 playoff game. I scored an Edmonton night game, the goal, the 10th goal of the night, and I went end-to-end doing the Pumpernickel, and Bob named me the Pumpernickel.
Oh, it's a pretty sweet nickname. Bernie, you mentioned you went to McDonald's. What was your order of choice when you and Wayne were having lunch at McD's?
It was a Big Mac.
Always?
Yeah. Yeah.
How healthy did you eat in the 80s, and did your diet change in the 90s?
Definitely not healthy. I would eat one of those little things of ice cream every night when I played. Like I was bad with the junk food. Desserts, love desserts. It wasn't good. It's still, it's better now, but I could show you my girl and I, our little cubby hole up there. We got like chips and, you know, some chocolate, a little bit of everything there. So it's still, it's better. But it's not good.
Bernie, you're talking to the man here, buddy. I am a sweet tooth junkie. So I got a lot of respect for this. So what is Bernie Nichols? You get one sweet, only one. What is Bernie Nichols eating?
It'd be, probably ice cream, something with butterscotch or caramel. But there's so many different things just to pick one. There's a dessert at the Keg that's out of this world. Something with ice cream or caramel on it for sure.
Oh, I love it. A true junkie. Yeah. You can't even pick one. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Which NHL team that you played for had the best pregame meal?
Well, you know what? They were all the same. We always had pasta, chicken and steak, salad. But then you had the ice cream for dessert, and you know, you got the berries on the ice cream, butterscotch, a little chocolate sauce. So they're all the same. I had that every day, every game day. It was pasta. I always had steak instead of chicken, but I hit that dessert hard.
Bertie, you mentioned, you know what, that you played with Gretzky, you played against Messier, you played against Gretzky and Edmonton as a center. Which of the elite centers was the toughest one for you to defend?
I always say my fiercest competitor, and I have more respect for him probably than anybody, and I played against him the most, was Mark Messier. Edmonton, I was in LA. We played Edmonton all the time. when I was in New York or New Jersey, when we played that series against the Rangers, that I got Mess. And as much as I love Mess as a player, as a person, God, I hated playing against him. He was tough. Yeah.
Did you get a great
too? I don't know if you remember early in his career, he was mean.
Oh,
thank God when he started scoring goals, because then he didn't play as mean. He may have been a little dirty too at times. I don't think he's going to be upset with me saying that, but he was awesome and great in faceoffs. Just a tough, just, oh man, Mess was my fiercest by far.
Did you ever get a Messier elbow?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll never forget too. And I can't really say it, but we were playing in New Jersey.
Oh, you can say it. You can say it.
Yeah. And we're behind the net and I kind of gave him a shot. He says, "You're fucking with the wrong guy." I never said anything, but I just kind of, you know, I knew what he meant. I was. Yeah.
Well, Bernie, yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to hear you're doing well. Congratulations on your engagement. And it sounds like you and your fiance are huge sports fans still and watching the games and the playoffs should be fantastic. So thanks so much for joining us. Give a little bit of insight on being an elite goal scorer and point getter in an NHL season.
Well, I appreciate you having me, guys. Anytime. That was fun.
Bernie Pumpernickels. That's a sick nickname, Frank.
I knew you were going there at some point. I was like, he's getting asked about the Pumpernickel.
Oh, how can you not, though? That was a Bob Miller. He's a beauty, man. We talked about Rick Jenneret recently. Some great calls. Mayday, mayday. Well, Pumpernickels, a pretty good one. And you know, it's interesting about Bernie Nichols, man. You score 5 points in your last game of the year, knowing that you don't get to play in the 80th game. Like, I do wonder, and I should have asked him, but I remember talking to him one other time, and they were determined, the coaching staff, we're not playing in Vancouver for that 80th game. So, you know, he might have ended the season with 69. And I like what he said, you know, 70 is that much better than 69. And I'm sure Austin Matthews will want to get to 60, just like I think
Steven Stamkos said that last week. Yeah. He said, getting to 60, you know, you're at 59 and you want to get there so bad.
Yeah.
So it's definitely some interesting insight. What'd you make of his comments about how much more difficult it might have been to score goals then? I think that's the one part of the argument that, you know, maybe I glossed over or overlooked over the years, because you look at the highlights and it's a totally different game. The goalies look so different. They're so small. The pads are so small. They seem to be all over the ice. Like, it just looks like a different game.
Well, there was a picture the other day on social media, and I don't know if you saw it, Tampa Bay, and there was four photos. There was Vasilevsky in the one photo, and he's standing there and, you know, he's shredded. He's a thin guy. And then there's a picture of Vasilevsky, the goalie. And I'm like, did they inflate him? Like, what's happening here? The goalies are definitely bigger and, you know, they play a different style. So I know people say the goalies are better. They're stylistically better, right? Because of the butterfly and it takes away the bottom of the net. But now you're seeing guys beat them upstairs, because kind of back in the 80s, you'd score on the ice because goalies were standing up. I really respected what Bernie said, because I agree. I think you throw in the fact that they didn't get to fly commercial, Frank. You know, so you're up, you're at 6 a.m, you're flying out the next day. They weren't getting these luxury flights like they are now. There's lots of different elements. And so are the goalies better? Sure. But ask Craig Simpson and different guys like that.
Coaching is so much better, though. Like, everything about it, it's a lot.
Well, they have video,
way harder,
right?
To score.
That's
now
an advantage for sure. Right. But I also think they put in more time. Like, you look at the power play percentages of teams today, Frank, are much better than when you got into the 90s, right? Even though there was tons of goals there, there wasn't teams with 26 and 28% on the power play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting debate. I thought he would say right away it's harder to score now, and I just was surprised that he didn't.
Yeah, I like what he had to say. So that's why I have to get Bernie back on again. He was a beauty. He's clearly a big hockey fan, and he had quite the illustrious career, man. 1,100 games.
Still 53rd all-time in goals.
Yeah, one of the underrated, like, elite offensive guys, I think, in the NHL. Like, when people talk about great scores, like, he had some really good years and obviously one of the greatest years ever. So lots of fun. And Frank, lots going on this weekend. We will see some teams getting closer to punch their ticket all the time to the playoffs. And the seeding race in the East, man, that, and then the race for, I guess, the third in the Pacific, but more so probably the wild card in the West.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.